Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, Sam and TJ discuss what you'll want to avoid this offseason in your player development workouts and what approaches you might want to take to ensure your players are improving. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Hardwood Hustle. Sam and I are going to talk player development today, and we're going to talk player development in a few different realms. You know, I get this question all the time. I was recently met with a WNBA team, and they were talking about player development and the time they have. They have a limited amount of time, like it's quick, and these players are playing in different countries, and they're coming from different levels, and they have some restraints around time. And I was talking to some high school coaches the other day, and they were implementing the read and react offense, and they were asking player development questions, what they were going to do in June with their team. And I thought to myself, okay, what would I do with a high school team and a feeder program if I had a certain amount of time? Then I'm working with my daughter who wants to be a better player, and I'm asking myself, all right, what do I need to work on the most? What do I prioritize? And it got me thinking, Sam, like when it comes down to player development, I mean, there's so many angles you could go, so many directions. Most players have so many things to work on. You could almost just throw a dart and just say, let's work on that. And wherever that dart landed, how does a coach cipher through all of this in deciding player development? I just think there's so many factors, and you know, you hear so many different ideas, and you can watch a video and you're like, oh, that's a great player development, I'll do that one today, right? But we know player development's a long-term stacking of habits. So where do you even begin? I mean, what are some of the things that you're just unpacking in your mind? I'm going to share some of mine, and Sam, I want to start off with you. Like, what do you start asking yourself when you're developing a player development plan? I mean, what are the factors that play into that to making sure you're squeezing as much juice out of each player and each team that you can?
The way I think about it is there's a universal approach that, hey, all players need a baseline of skill. Then there's an individual approach. And player development is very individualistic. I mean, if you think about your college team, there's guys right now who coming into next year, they all have different roles. They all have different strengths and weaknesses. And so it is very individualistic. So I think that's the key as a coach, is to get really clear, like, what's the end game? What are your goals? Come when the season starts back, what do you want to have had happen? And then make sure you reverse engineer it. So that's individual meetings, and that's collective thought and meeting. The way I approach it, or if I was a high school coach, TJ, going into June, I call it the SICK method, S-I-C-C, not K. And I would want to improve skill. I'd want to improve individual players is the I, and the C is the competing, and the fourth one, C, is connectedness. So I would want skill improvement. I'd want individual improvement, competitiveness, which I think is a skill, and then I'd want players to feel more connected. I know that's kind of from a team aspect, maybe not as much individual to your question.
Yeah, you know, I think this is, there's probably 100 different answers you could give, and I don't know what the right one is all the way. I mean, I think as coaches, we have to ask the right questions to figure out what the right approach is for each player. But I do think, you know, I've got a player that's got a chance to go to the NBA, and I was talking to different coaches and different player development things that they would do. And, you know, what we developed in him in college isn't necessarily what he would need to develop at the next level, because he's going to specialize. You know what I mean? In the NBA, there's a handful of players that do everything, but most players are just really specialized. You know, there's 3-and-D guys, and you need to be able to knock down the corner three and occasionally drive a long closeout, right? You know, but you know, in college, we were working on ball screen reads and playing without the ball and a whole bunch of different things. Well, it's totally different. And I think it's true also of players, you know, as players graduate and move on and your player changes every year, each year you're going to need something different from players. So I think a big part of it is, Sam, and I'm just trying to put in all the factors for coaches we're talking through this. I think time is one. You know, if you had a player move in and they've got 1 year left with you, you're trying to help them to have the best year possible, right? Like that long-term development versus a seventh grader that you want to have get to a certain place in 3 to 4 years. Like the approach to that is drastically different, but most coaches don't have endless amounts of time to develop every player into their specific needs and wants and whatever it might be. And the need you have from this year might be different than the need next year. So I think besides time, a second thing that you need to factor in is what will make them successful in what you do. You know what I mean? Like, let's just say that you're a team that doesn't like to dribble the ball a lot and you cut a lot, read and react, whatever. Like, you want players to play without the ball well. Let's just say that you're a ISO ball screen team where one player gets the ball the most and other people in the corner. Like, that's a whole different set of development. I mean, so I think time is one. And I think also deciding what's important to your team, like what you do and what will actually set them up, does what we're developing them in translate to what we are trying to accomplish? And then a third one, like a travel ball team, you know, you have players for a certain amount of time in the off season. I mean, I don't think most coaches are thinking about this, but probably should be, is like what's best for their long-term development. And I think that's where basketball's kind of gone wrong. We don't need to get on this tangent, but you know, if I have a, you know, AAU team or whatever that I'm playing for, like, and I'm trying to win games, I'm going to try and develop according to what's going to win games versus what actually might translate to when they go back to their high school or to the next level or whatever. Ideally, you're doing both of those things. But in reality, I see a lot of teams that aren't doing both of those things. They're, you know, if we have two practices a week or three practices a week, then you're trying to get your team ready and they're not necessarily focusing on development, which they should be focusing on in the off season.
Yeah. On that note, going in the mic, zooming in for a second, we've gone to like the 60-30 approach or 45-45. So in a 90-minute practice, TJ, if we would spend 60 minutes on their individual development, like really high reps on habits, skills, and reads. So I think when we're talking player development, we really need to talk about all three of those things. And that doesn't even include the physical and the mental. But so yeah, like, or do you spend 45 minutes on team stuff? Because you do have to get your team ready for a travel ball tournament. Or if you're a high school coach, getting them ready for a camp or a team setting. And so you're spending some time on team stuff while also individual. I don't know about you, if you were a high school coach and your dad was a longtime high school coach, if I was a high school coach, I think I wouldn't have done this early, but I think now I might take the approach of, we're going to work a lot on offense. We're going to work a lot on skill improvement. And I'm not going to do a ton of team defensive stuff. Now, what I would expect is like great effort and, great communication. But I think I would potentially really focus in on that so that they are improving what is, quote, a more fun part of their game. Now, if we're going in completely new programming and they were starting from scratch, I might feel differently. But that, what would you do something like that? Or would you just say, I'm going to coach my team the way I'm going to coach my team?
Yeah. I mean, holistically, I think you have to, it's interesting because, you know, if you got into coaching a travel ball team and you have them for 3 months, let's just say, and this is where all the competing things in basketball, I think, are really kind of doing a disservice to players. It's like, if you just had them for 3 months, you were just trying to make the best player you possibly could, you know, you're trying to win. I mean, a coach might easily say, well, I just know how to teach defense the best. And that's all they focus on. And those players develop very little skill wise. They might be better defenders or whatever, but they, you know, and then they might go into high school and you worked on this 2-3 zone because you're a 2-3 guru, and then they never even play that in high school. That's where I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. I'm just saying there's just a lack of alignment in the development of players throughout our entire system, which is a major problem because, you know, it's like anything else. If you wanted to be a great leader, you would work on the skills necessary to be a great leader each day, year over year. You would compound interest and you would go. But if one day you wanted to be a great X's and O's, and then the next month you wanted to be great at leadership, you would just be jumping all over the map. And that's kind of what happens with basketball, is we're just jumping all over the map. I was talking to a high school coach the other day, and she was kind of frustrated with their travel ball team. Just be transparent, they were running some read and react stuff. And there's a reality to that in the read and react. You're putting some responsibility with the players. You're giving them opportunities to grow. Lots of people are going to touch the ball. But the travel ball team would be better if they were just one player had the ball in their hands more and they were running the ball, you know. And so they were having to choose, and that person was a little bit frustrated. And I get it because there was a – and I know this because when I coached BCB for you, you know, I was oftentimes going to a game and think I could help this team win more. But I would have to sacrifice the development of all the players and really just kind of hide a few players and get the ball to my main players and do whatever. But it's like, fortunately enough, I wasn't, and I don't think that's the philosophy of your program. It's not, is to just go win games at all cost. If it was win games at all cost, I would have coached totally different than seeing the long-term development of these seventh and eighth grade girls. And I mean, it's you wish you could have both, and ideally you want to try and somewhat create both, but there's a reality that those things do compete with each other often, is what is best for their long-term development and, you know, what is actually going to win a game on Saturday.
100%. I can't remember if I shared this on here, like, you know, Cooper, our middle child, he's in seventh grade now. When I was coaching him in fifth grade, we played everybody because we wanted to develop. Yeah. And that's different than playing your best players, which in youth basketball and travel basketball, usually you're playing the best players the most minutes. And everybody gets to make that decision and know why you do it. I think the older they get, that can be more justified. But in fifth grade, we played equal playing time and we finished middle of the pack of the league. And then I went in the playoffs and I told all the parents, hey, we're going to play to win. And so I don't know if your son will play. They may play 30 seconds. They may play 3 minutes. They may not play at all. And we went on and won the championship because we played our better players. But we accomplished both things. We won a championship, but we developed players throughout the season. But a lot of coaches, you have to make some of those tough decisions. As a high school coach, do you, in ninth grade and JV, my number one goal probably for my ninth grade coach would not be to, like, win a championship. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a goal. I want them to win, but that wouldn't be the number one goal. My number one goal is like, can you get these players better? Can you prepare them for a varsity season? And that's different than just playing, you know, six players in these short ninth grade games. So I think that's good. Let me let you got something on that.
No, I agree with you. I was just saying, like, we're raising a lot of questions that I think you have to process through. Cause like another one that I hear high school coaches all the time, like, what do you do with June? And they're like, well, we're playing, some of these people are playing 20 games in 30 days. And so what does that say to me? Like, they value like experience the most. I'm not saying that's the wrong thing, but if you're gonna play 20 games in 30 days, yeah, you're going to get some experience, but likely you're not going to develop the player. I mean, there's some things that might develop learning the game, but at the same time, it's hard to become a better shooter, you know, better skills, better, you know, all. It's hard to do that because over the course of a 32-minute game, let's just say you play 12 players because it's summer ball. So they're in there for, you know, 16 minutes each or 14 minutes each. In 14 minutes, you're actually going to touch the ball, you know, what, 15 times? And so I can get you 15 touches in 10 minutes of practice. And you know, you're going to have to make, you know, 15 decisions where over the course of a game you played, it took your entire, you know, day, and you're going to make 5 decisions on a 3-minute ride home, a 3-hour ride home, a 3-hour ride there, and a 1-hour game. You're going to make 5 decisions. Like, that's, if you're really trying to develop their decision-making, you could put them in 3-on-3 small-sided games and put them in 100 decisions in 6 hours. You know what I mean? Versus that other time. That's another thing that factors in what is the right thing to be doing there.
Well, high school basketball in 2004 is a lot different than 2024. In 2004, it's go to a few team camps, have the overnight experience, get bond with your teammates, play a lot of games. I mean, these kids now are playing so many games after the high school season until June gets there. That model isn't as effective or as important. I think, to your point, get more skill work in, get more time in the gym, more touches with the ball in your hands, play more small sided games, play more 1-on-1, 3-on-3, and be a little more creative. The other thing in player development, TJ, that I think is important, and again, we've talked about this maybe on previous some, but if your strength is sometimes like, how much time do you spend on your strength versus your weakness? Because sometimes we're like, well, we need to really improve our weaknesses. Well, you might need to double or triple down on your strengths. If your strength is shooting and you're pretty good at it, but your weakness is so strong, like you're weak with the ball, you turn it over a lot, and your defense is so subpar, you never get to utilize your strength because the weakness is too strong. Well, you're going to have to spend time on the weakness. But if your weakness is not a hindrance to you getting on the floor, then go spend even more time on shooting, right? I think those are questions you got to think about.
Yeah, that's another just question to go in there, right? Like this is, I mean, player development's tough. Like there's just a lot of things to decide and a lot of things to ask. And if we're being really honest with it, like as a parent that's a basketball coach, I see certain things that I'm like, I hope they work on this with my child. And oftentimes they don't. And I'm not even blaming them because they're responsible for 15 kids. You know, and you also can dilute your player development because you're responsible for so many people that they're not really paying attention to what my daughter needs because they're trying to think, give her a little bit of this, let's just cover off everybody. Let's get some ball handling, some shooting in, some whatever. But here's what my daughter or my son could benefit from. And, you know, I know that's a selfish approach, like, but that's what I'm thinking as a coach. But they're responsible for a lot of people and a lot of people's player development, which makes it even more complicated.
It is. I think, yeah, you know your child is as good as anyone. You do hope that the coach sees what you see. When it comes to the strength versus weakness thing, you brought up something earlier. I was talking with a Power Five assistant this morning before we jumped on, and they have a player who's a borderline NBA draft, whether they return or whether they go. This player actually would be well known to most people listening, but I won't say name. My point is this, is they are – what they're trying to get across this player, and what I think maybe you're getting across to your player is what got you here won't get you there. And so, you know, like KJ has to adjust his game to get on an NBA roster. I've seen players out of Atlanta – you know, Atlanta produced a lot of NBA players. Well, the player they were in high school or college is a lot different than an NBA player. And so I think coaches have to understand if you have a sophomore that might make the varsity this year, TJ, that sophomore, if they were playing JV in high school, they might have the ball in their hands and be shooting 15, 20 times a game. For them to play varsity minutes, they're going to shoot 4 or 5 times a game and have to be a great effort. Those are very two different roles. And sometimes you have to put on two different hats because they're going to play, you know, 2 quarters in the JV game and 3 quarters in the varsity. That takes a level of maturity from a player. But as coaches, you have to be able to communicate that and get that across to them.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I want to move into some solutions to this in just a second. But before we go there, I just got one last thought and get your opinion on this. I mean, I think that players are more skilled than they've ever been. We've talked about that before. You know, there's just more, I don't know what it is, more athletic ability. You know, there's more skill development, people more. But there are some things that haven't gotten better. But in general, what I see come through our doors, which I think we're a pretty good gauge because the highest level of Division I basketball, you're going to have some players that like they might be good, but they also have some things. If it's a post player, they just, you know, instead of a post player at our league being 6'7", they're going to have a 6'11 guy. You know what I mean? Like it's just they're just only a limited number of those guys out there. And, you know, a great guard, they're going to be able to put up 30 a game in high school or 25 or whatever, depending on the system. But in general, we got to get the guy that is probably, you know, the best player on their high school team, but not the best player in the state, you know, that type of player. And I'm more and more, I see these, when we bring them in for workouts, it's very hard to decipher difference. You know what I mean? Like, we don't bring in many bad players, but we don't bring in many players where it's easy to tell they have separation in this area. So we might bring in, you know, 14 players and, you know, 12 of the 14 can shoot it pretty good. You know, they can all handle it okay. They can all whatever. But I'm having a harder time these days seeing walking and be like, oh my gosh, that's the guy. Unless it's just a size or athleticism thing. But I mean, just based on if everybody was the same height, same whatever, it is getting harder and harder to decipher why that player is better. And I think that's a generality, but I think it's pretty true. There's more better players out there, but there's less separation out there.
Yeah, I think you're right. In your seat, that's definitely tough. And you also, but you're looking at more than just that factor. You're looking at how they fit into your culture. Do they have the right mindset? Which we haven't talked about that. Like in any player development, I think mindset, regardless of position, age, stage, are you working on their mindset, their confidence, their adversity, ability to handle adversity in tough moments, NBA, next best, all those things. This is actually one I was thinking about earlier this morning and over the weekend is, I know we're all over the map here, but 2 foot versus 1 foot finishes player development offseason. I am a proponent of the 2 foot finish for a lot of reasons. We teach it at PGC and that's where I really kind of settled in on it. But I also like to let kids play outside the box too and give them some freedom because there's no absolutes. We haven't talked about this in a long time. Do you with your players, are you teaching 2 feet as a staple or are you just letting them make their own decisions there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question from this sense. I think, you know, we want to get into solutions, but I think you're just raising another question. You know, like that's tough. I mean, I think each team has principles in which they value a lot and we value that. Why do we value it? We don't value it just because it looks good. We value it because it buys time. And if it buys time, you're going to make better decisions. That's why. I mean, if you just go watch a practice and you watch people take off of 1 foot all the time, like we're doing this right now. In the spring, we go through workouts and I really don't overcoach things because I want them to make a lot of mistakes. I just kind of let them play. But the other day in practice, I said, guys, it's hard for me not to stop this right now. You do recognize that we've just jumped to pass the ball off 1 foot and turned it over 3 out of the last 5 possessions doing that. Like, you just need to see that, you know? And so, yeah, I am. I'm a big proponent of 2 feet simply to limit turnovers, to make better decisions, and to buy time. Like, I think it's just a really obvious one where kids love to just jump in the air and make decisions. And it's a disaster waiting to happen for most players. Now, occasionally there's a player that can, you know, make some better decisions off 1 foot. And 1 foot is sometimes the right decision. But yeah, in general, that's a staple for our team. We want you to play off 2 feet. You're going to turn the ball over less. You're going to make better decisions. But I also want them to experiment and learn to control their body and to make different reads and different moves. And so, the reason as another question is because you're going to teach both. It's just one more thing to teach. You're going to teach 5 things in ball handling, 7 things in shooting. It's just one more thing to develop in a player, which just keeps adding to the list of things they need to work on.
That is a tough thing. Yeah. Less is more usually. And sometimes as a coach, you're also having a little bit of your own experiment. You're trying to figure out what you believe and test out some things that you hear, whether you hear it on a podcast or see a player do it. You know, Jay on the finishing thing, Jalen Brunson and Villanova, I think, have really brought to life the value of 2 foot finishes from a high profile program like Villanova when Jay Wright was there. And then in the NBA, you see a player like Jalen Brunson who has so much success. So what are your thoughts on the solutions piece?
Yeah, well, let's just throw out some things that I think coaches maybe want to look at or look into. And here's one of the things, like I just think everybody could benefit from a few things. And so I think those things, like you have to decide on what do you value the most. And so when you ask me, like, what would I value the most in like player development? And here are some things, and then here are some ways to do it. And let's just start with a list of things that you would really value. So I value decision making. Like, players that make better decisions are going to make your team better, right? So that's one thing. I value shooting. I want them to be able to make shots. It stretches the floor, makes everything better offensively. I value effort, like the ability to just play hard and compete all of the time. And so, I mean, there's other things that I value, but I'm just going to stay. Like, if you just had to, you know, things in threes are often good in a list. But if I had to value three things, I would value decision making. And a lot of things go into that. I mean, like playing on balance helps with decision making. I mean, we could go on down a long list, but I'm just going to go with three just so we're being a little bit more decisive here. So decision making, shooting, and effort. Like, those are three things that, like, if every player on my team was a better decision maker, played harder, and could shoot the ball better, I would have a better team. And I think that's true of everybody, right? Now, you could say, well, if everybody was a better passer, we would have a better team too. Yeah, you would. And if everybody was a better rebounder, we'd have a better – yeah, you for sure would. I'm just trying to put the highest value, like, what would I want from my team? And those are the three things, like, towards the top of the list that I would value the most. And so I've got some ideas around things we would do to develop these. But those are, I'll just start with the list. I mean, we could add or subtract things that you might put on that you would value the most in player development.
Well, those are great. I actually wouldn't, if we had a pecking order of top three, I would, okay, let me say it in my own words, like decision-making, we're talking about smarter players. And I believe smarter players are more athletic players. So let me introduce that idea. I think smarter players are more athletic players. What does that mean when you hear me say it? I don't know if me and you've talked about this. What do you think about?
I mean, if I had to guess where you're going with it, I think more athletic players, they know how to use their body better. They know how to, you know, make themselves more athletic with their, even something like jump stops we just talked about, right? I mean, I think that makes them more athletic. I think just effort makes you more athletic. I think being smarter makes you not necessarily more athletic, but it helps you close the gap on the athletic disadvantage.
Okay. Yeah. If you're a smarter player, you're more athletic. Here's why. If I'm guarding you, TJ, and I'm a smart basketball player and I know what you do well, I'm going to make you not do that thing. I'm going to make you do the thing you don't do well. That makes me quicker. I'm quicker with my feet because I know what you're going to do and I know how to play you on offense. Or excuse me, if I'm a help defender and I'm a smart basketball player, I'm thinking the game. I'm reading the ball handler. I'm anticipating off-ball movements. So that me using my mind, which, by the way, this is not commonly done by most players, me using my mind and thinking and anticipating, that makes me a more athletic player. I'm going to move faster. I'm going to jump higher. I'm going to get off the ground quicker. On offense, I'm more athletic because I understand the game. I know how to get to a spot and – that makes me more athletic because I'm going to be quicker, you know, slow meat, slow feet. Remember that? Okay. Got the t-shirt coming.
Yes. I remember that.
Yeah. So I agree with you. So back to your three, I love it. Decision-making. I'm in agreement there. Shooting, premium on shooting. And then I would probably classify effort and just say compete. What came to my mind also when you said that was Dean Smith's old adage of play hard, play smart, play together. And it rings true 40 years later. If you can get your players and your teams to play hard, to play smart, play together. So the together piece is the only one that you didn't have. It's like, I want to get my players to be great teammates in the offseason. And how do we do that? Pull a teammate with you in your player development, get on the gun, get in the gym, check in with teammates. How are they doing, you know, personally on a personal level? I would want my players learning how to be great teammates. That might be serving in their community when they're back home. That might be whatever it is. So that would be the only one I would add to it.
Yeah. So then what do you do with that? I mean, here's what I'm not saying this is, you know, 100 proof, but with Bella, so working with her, and I asked myself, okay, it's hard to work on decision-making one-on-o, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that is like, all right, if other players come into the workout or we're in a team setting, I want to spend a lot of time on decision-making. Right. But in the meantime, like if just me and her are working out, there's two things that I can work on a lot, which is shooting and effort. And I think another one you could throw in there, not just shooting, but just scoring in general. So finishing too, right? Like finishing and shooting. But effort could go both ways, both on a team setting and individual setting. So, you know, she asked me, hey, do you have an hour or two to do workouts, you know, a couple of days a week, whatever? And I started thinking about it and I was like, all right, if we were in there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, because I think players are the grind. So that's a lot of time. What would we do? You know, so I said to her, listen, here's what I'll do with you. I'll work you out all summer long, but only for 32 minutes. And here's what my thought approach to that. You know, after the 32 minutes, she could do, or before, she could do strength, shooting, you know, extra ball handling, anything that she wanted to do. But in that 32 minutes to develop better effort and playing the game faster and harder, I said, let's just work out for 32 minutes. That's the length of a high school game. But let's feel what it's like to go as hard as you possibly can for 32 minutes. Because I think one major problem in player development is players think I'll go in the gym for an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever. And there's not that there's not value. I mean, after we go in for a 32-minute workout, you can turn the gun on for an hour. Great. But what happens, I think, is a lot of players learn to pace themselves. And I think that's why the effort's gone down, is they play so many games. I'm going to play 3 games a day. I got to pace myself. I'm going to play 30 minutes. I got to pace myself. I want to be in the gym for 2.5 hours. I got to pace myself. And so my agreement with her is that I'll do workouts with you all summer, but I'll never do one longer than 32 minutes. And that is my approach in being, you know, because outside the box a little bit, but what if every 32 minute workout we did, she went max effort, right? And so we're trying to piece that right now, like with 4 minutes at a time, with a little bit of a break with free throws and water, but do it 8 times, you know, and trying to get to that place where we could go really, really hard, because in that I can develop a lot of shooting, which even if we're going that hard, it's fatigue shooting, which is more game like, you know, she's shooting, you know, X number of shots. We're finishing the last 4 minutes with nonstop shooting when she's at her most tired. So now we're building in effort, endurance, mental toughness, shooting, all of those things, but effort, like 32 minutes of effort, everything's got to be hard. And so that's one of the approaches that we just started it. So I can't tell you exactly how it's going to go. But that's when I thought about actually developing her and what mattered the most, that's where I landed on maybe the best thing I could do for her this summer.
I like that a lot. I think that's manageable. A lot of people, when they're developing habits, is they try to go big. And they're successful for 1, 2, maybe 3 days, and then they fall off, and then they feel like a failure, and then they never jump back on. And so starting small, I think, is a huge hack, a huge winnable. It's got to be a challenge, but it's got to be attainable. And I've made a mistake as a young coach, especially when I got out of college coaching and started doing training. I would challenge kids, hey, make 500 threes a day. That wasn't good coaching. That was bad leadership on my part. I saw kids trying to do that, but they would not sustain it. So let me build on what you said, which is what I've been doing with athletes, is like 7-day challenges, not 30-day. Like, have a big goal. Hey, we're gonna shoot 10,000 threes this offseason. I think that's a great goal. Well, then break it up into smaller. But a 7-day challenge is, can Bella go out in the driveway, TJ, and just shoot 100 shots on her own, like 100 shots. Maybe that number is 50 for her. It doesn't even matter, really. What matters is make it small, make it something she can do by herself for 15 or 20 minutes. And can she do it in a 7-day period? She doesn't have to do it 7 straight days, but whatever she gets to set it, is it 5? Is it 6 of the 7? Is it 4? just decide it. And then they, now the, that young person learns about discipline. They learn about goal setting. They learn about, you know, going after it. And I think once you do it for 7 days, okay, let's go another 7 days. We've proved we were successful in the first 2 7-day challenges. Now we go from 100 shots. Let's go up to 125 or 150. I think that's an effective mechanism to use.
Yeah. So coaches, you know, one of the challenges here for you is like get outside the box a little bit. And let me actually, here's a quote for you. Get outside the box and stop doing the checkbox workouts. And so the checkbox workout, did we do passing? Did we do ball handling? Did we do shooting? Did we do finishing? Did we? And I think that that's like, it kind of like a scouting report, like cover your butt scouting report. We told the players all 1,000 things they're going to do, but they're not really ready to guard any of them. I think that's happening a lot in our player development. So Sam and I gave you two ideas after we kind of uncovered the problem and uncovered some of the things that could make it hard to make the right decisions, and gave you two outside the box ideas, like a max game workout. So that's, you're going to go as hard as you can for the length of a game. And then two, like 7-day challenges, sticking to things that are, can I achieve this? And then stack that, you know, kind of like atomic habits, stack that. Here's a new 7-day challenge, and here's a new 7-day challenge. And can you just keep stacking little habits? Because sometimes I think we go so big and so broad, maybe we don't accomplish anything. We would love to hear some of your ideas on things you're doing in workouts that are a little bit outside the box that might be conducive to better learning, to better growth, more sustainable things that could develop a player over time. Because we do have to be creative, but we also got to be to the point. Like, what are we actually working on? The main thing, like keeping the main thing, the main thing. Sam and I will do another episode later on and unpack some more ideas of things that you can do in your player development, but we're interested to hear your thoughts. Hey coaches, thanks for listening. He is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We also want to make sure you know about our coaching resources and freebies available to you at pgchustle.com. We have a workshop, a Read and React masterclass, and effective practice planning tips to help you enhance your coaching. Get started at pgchustle.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.